Good afternoon and welcome to Living on Purpose. My name is Lynn and I am your host.
Hi, Lynn.
I'd like to welcome all listeners today. I've got a special guest, and that's Dr. Bruce Lipton. And please check out his website, brucelipton.com, because there are notes there that you can download and refer to in conjunction with what you'll hear today, because that will really help to integrate a lot of these ideas. He's a cell biologist from years ago, and his name kept coming around to me the last few weeks, and so I finally decided to make contact with him and invite him to be my guest. He's on quite a speaking tour right now with his book, The Biology Belief, which is quite a synopsis of the new science and really worth considering a lot of these new ideas that go against the traditional science that we have been taught and that is actually still being taught, even though there is evidence and solid research to prove opposite ideas. This new perspective of human biology does not view the body as just a mechanical device, but rather incorporates the role of a mind and spirit. This breakthrough in biology is fundamental in all healing, for it recognizes that when we change our perception or beliefs, we send totally different messages to our cells and reprogram their expression. The new biology reveals why people can have spontaneous remissions or recover from injuries deemed to be permanent disabilities. Dr. Bruce Lipton is regarded as one of the leading voices of the new biology, and his work summarizing his findings, entitled The Biology Belief, is newly released from Mountain of Love Books.
I had the opportunity to hear Dr. Bruce Lipton speak at an MS symposium in Vancouver, November 2002. I can remember sitting at the table in the back of the room, listening to this very learned, obviously educated man, describing to me what I've been doing to live well with MS. The symposium was entitled Healthy Choices with MS, and he gave us how-tos beyond what I thought would be possible. He has a wonderful way of speaking from scientific terminology within the same sentence to layman's terms. So he drew you right into the conversation, making sure that nobody misunderstood what he was saying or how he was saying it, or believing that it was something that you could do yourself, making healthy choices, staying youthful, laughing to heal. He had an enormous amount of messages. To me, it's still a life-altering experience. You want to heal, you got to stay in the grow mode. Having fun, staying youthful, blowing bubbles, singing songs. And I can say, you know, it works. I've been doing it for 4 years successfully, and my doctors say, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And that's what I'm doing. During Dr. Lipton's presentation of that symposium, what he gave me was validation for the choices I'd been making for my own health with scientific theory. So I knew what I was doing was more than just a thought. It had a theory. It had research behind it. It had validity. So it gave me encouragement to keep doing it. It wasn't just me. There was a whole scientific group looking at the mind-body connection. You can't heal one without the other. It works together. That's what I think Dr. Lipton's message was to me. You have to take care of the spirit as well as the body. One without the other ain't gonna work.
Hi, Lynn, this is Pam. We're going to try something. We've been making up a new song, Logan and I. We thought we'd phone and leave it on your answering machine, okay?
You ready?
Okay.
Tiny bubbles in the wind. Tiny bubbles make me grin. Like a giggle from your laugh. Gotta have fun with what you have. Say hi, Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
That was fun. Bye, Lynn.
Hi, Bruce. It's Lynn.
Hi, it's me. Lucky guess you picked the right number. The whole issue with MS is an unfortunate situation because it's like an autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
And autoimmune diseases are related to dysfunctions of the immune system. You could look at the immune system as being dysfunctional in either of two ways. Physically, mechanically, it just doesn't work. Or by program and instructions and direction, it's got some misinformation that keeps it from working.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things. Either it's physically broken or there's something wrong in the information, right? And what's interesting is that in today's field of immunology, the leading edge at some point is an area called psychoneuroimmunology.
You've okay.
probably heard of that term, psychoneuroimmunology?
Well, I can sort of link them all together in my mind. I don't know if I've quite heard them put together like
well,
that.
Well, okay, and when you link them together, it's the same meaning that they had when they assembled it in the first place. Hierarchy, the first one overrides the second, which then overrides the third, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and that's how you put them in the hierarchy.
Okay.
So immunology is the immune system, of course, and all the functioning mechanical parts of it. And then it's called neuroimmunology was the next level of it,
when mm-hmm.
they started to identify that the brain function was connected to the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And that the brain was capable of regulating the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't an autonomous thing. It was now under neural control.
Mm-hmm.
When they added the psycho part was that they realized that the psychology affected the neurology, which in turn affected
okay.
the immune system. Really what it says is that a person's immune system is under the control primarily of a person's psychology.
Our traditional ways of thinking how we are influenced through our genes, it's actually going in the other direction, that influence, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, because we bought into the whole gene story is actually a story that was seeded back in 1859, Charles Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
The significance of it was this, is that in understanding the theory of evolution, what they were looking at were the characteristics of organisms and how they fit to their environment, etc. But the very obvious facts started to become clear to Darwin, who, like most people at that time, were involved with breeding plants and animals and stuff like that. I mean, that was just like a pastime for the people back then. No TV.
Right.
And what was interesting was that since the issue of evolution focused on the traits and the changes of traits, it was also suggested in the theory then immediately accepted by everybody because they were breeding plants and animals, is that the traits are controlled by the parents in the sense that an offspring reflects the traits of its parents.
Right, which we all recognize.
Yeah, but what they did back in those days, because this was at the time of a beginning of focusing only on the material reality, the Newtonian character of
mm-hmm.
life. That it's just everything you want to understand is physical. The invisible stuff doesn't offer anything relevant to you, period. Okay, so you keep your eye on the physical things.
Keep your eye on the ball, as it
exactly.
were.
Exactly, and so the issue about that comes to the point when Darwin suggested that the traits, that control, that's that real big word, okay, the character of the offspring are passed from the parents to the offspring. Well, if they're passed from parent to offspring in a physical, mechanical, material world, then whatever controls the traits must be carried by the sperm and egg and then manifest themselves physically in the offspring. Then everybody agreed way back then, real early, like, okay, traits are controlled by physical things. They didn't know what they were because everything was physical, so the first thing you don't even suggest invisible. Traits are controlled by physical things that are passed through the germ cells that can end up and control the offspring. The focus of biology, which was shaped by the physics of the time, which is everything is mechanical, is that, well, the human body is like a giant mechanism, a machine, made out of chemical parts and things like that. And then this thing was like, well, if you could identify those physical things that carry the traits and manipulate them, then you can manipulate the traits.
Mm-hmm.
Since biology at the time was in that Newtonian belief system, the mission statement of biology, which is, I think, still the same mission statement, is to dominate and control nature.
Right. That sounds really cooperative.
Well, it isn't, because if it's a machine, it's like, well, how you cooperate with the machine? You tell the machine.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden that perception or perspective says that we tell the machine.
Yeah.
But you can't tell the machine until you understand how you can control the traits of the machine. But now the traits are at least somewhere in those sperm and eggs. So it's like, okay, the direction was already set. The opinion was already produced. The conclusion was physically being sought after that was already focused upon before the experiment.
There wasn't even any actual research done. They just jumped to that conclusion.
They jumped to the conclusion. Sometimes when things seem very obvious, you know, then at some point you just grab for the obvious, only to later find out as a cosmic joke that you missed something.
After they've had it in textbooks in school for how many years and still do?
Well, they still do. The issue really concerns the investment into the process.
Well, yeah, and all the spring-offs from that, like the pharmaceutical industry, for example.
And the maintenance of the belief that allows the pharmaceutical company to work goes back to that same principle of the Newtonian physics. It's a machine, it's physical, it's made out of matter. You want to adjust the machine, you adjust it using matter, and matter in this particular case are called drugs. So then all of a sudden they become self-important in the process by establishing that the process only operates the way they say it does.
So you mentioned the word belief there, which is pretty fundamental in everything you're talking about, Bruce. And we're looking at the belief in the pharmaceutical industry, which is based on this falsehood, basically, in how things actually work. And you're looking at a whole new approach to what belief really means and how belief can affect our lives in a much more positive and, shall I say, victimless fashion.
Well, right. The word victim, that's the critical word at this reason. I tell you from the professional point of view, I'm the biomedical person, right? And
okay.
I tell you about you, and I say, yes, yeah. You are a biochemical machine, and you are controlled by genes. And now you see this issue that you have? Well, that's something wrong with the machine. And therefore, we can fix it by either changing your genes or changing the biochemistry. Those are the two things.
Mm-hmm.
Until recently, of course, changing the genes was an idea that couldn't really be obtained, so that in lieu of changing genes, you just change the chemical environment to affect the operation of the genes. But that means changing it with chemicals, which means buying a drug and putting it into the system. Now, the problem is that, indeed, physical things are involved. There's no question about that. But if you look at it the way they did, which is the Newtonian perspective, there is only the physical, and then anything other than physical is not worthy of academic consideration. So it says, if I'm a scientist and I look at the body, I look at it physically, and you tell me about mind and energy and fields, and I look at you going, well, that's very nice, but there's no relevance to the body. The body's a physical machine.
Yeah.
So then everything I do from that point on is how I can leverage or influence the physical machine without trying to understand the nature is, are there other mechanisms of control? So I throw out the invisible stuff just because that was a given. That was a starting point that you don't have to invoke visible stuff. That was actually when science separated from religion, and that is the whole focus point, actually, is that religion claimed that everything was controlled by the invisible stuff. And when things seem to be out of control in the world and things go crazy, and then so the people in the black coats were saying, God and spirit did this, and be careful, and all that, a new group of people wearing white coats came in and said, but maybe I can understand it without putting the invisible stuff. Maybe it's possible that it's just a physical thing. And that instead of the religious view of invisible moving forces, which can be defined as spirit, instead of invoking spirits, let's just invoke this as a mechanical machine.
Yeah, but Bruce, there's a bit of a crack in that theory because the science has become the new religion, and they put the fear of God in us if we don't go along with their dogma.
Well, now we even step one step even further back, because we go now back to the religion point as well, and it goes like this, that in our world, in order for me to make more money than anybody else, I have to provide something that is of value to somebody. When you go back to that ancient, darker world where there was no real science at that point, and phenomena of the planet and weather and people and everything were just such a mystery that you shrouded it, and you bought a belief because it seemed good at the time that there are spirits, that spirits are influencing this unfoldment. Now, here's where the problem comes from. The people who told you that story also added one little caveat. They said, we are the ones who speak to spirit. See, so now what do? Is they put the fear on the outside,
yeah,
and they tell you, this fear is going to get you, but guess what? You can't get there
exactly
without me. And so that's how they manipulated the situation. They had everybody live in fear that the unknown was going to get them, but they, as mediators of the unknown, for a certain fee, which was kind of high, would do this interface and take care of it for you. And, of course, the problem is, over the time, the church became more of a burden than a support, and that's what led to the Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
The Reformation said, get off my back, you know, with this stuff, because the story you've been telling all these years, I haven't gotten any better, I paid a lot of money, and things are worse, so now to explain that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that opened up the opportunity of science to come in, and then science says, okay, let's throw out the spirit stuff, and can we understand it by the mechanical stuff? And then they say, oh, yeah, look, it's these mechanisms and these chemicals, and they interact, and this and this and this and this. All of a sudden they say, we know how it works. You have a broken machine. Do you want it to get it fixed? Then you must come to to us.
Exactly.
Because we, wearing the white coats, actually know how to fix the machine, and those guys in the black coats, they just have a story, but so it ends up, whose story did the people buy? Well, at first they held on to the black coats. But now, over time, the miracles of science outstrip the miracles of the people wearing the black coat, so the white coat people all of a sudden got all the attention and the relevance. Even people who claim to be very religious, if they have a cancer, before they go to the priest, they'll go to the doctor. Oh, stand back. What does that mean? The answer is they may claim religion is very important, but when it comes down to immediate threat on their life, let's go to the mechanical guy. He's the one that's going to do it. And the issue is this. Over time, just as the priests were found to be ineffective in delivering on their belief that they could control the spirits in this process, it didn't work, right?
Right.
Our belief that the people in the white coats were going to do this for us, and we gave them a number of years to do that, and now we're at a reformation point. Because with all the promises, with all the claims, people are sicker now than they've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
The environment's getting sicker than it's ever been. We're facing crises that we've never faced before. And there's a point where you have to look back and say, well, you told me you knew how to take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden people realize if they have a problem now, they're not so anxious maybe to jump into the conventional doctoring field, that people started to recognize that they were getting a more positive effect by complementary sources. And at some point then all of a sudden the crowd started to get a little restless. The Church of the White Coat Scientists got a little upset because now they're realizing that the dollars that they've commanded forever are now going to other places.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a backlash of the science church. You come
yeah.
back into the fold, because what we're going to do is we're going to attack everybody who claims that they can do what we do.
We're going to make illegal the natural healing herbs and plants.
Right, because I can't control them.
Doesn't this go against what they signed up for as doctors, to take care of the patients?
Hippocratic oath, and hypocritically Hippocratic in this regard. The Hippocratic oath, the first premise is do no harm. Then all of a sudden you have to stop, and we face a statistic that is clear. People can look up the statistics on the website Gary Null, GaryNull.com, and there's an article that Gary provides called Death by Medicine, which is the statistics of how many people die of what is called iatrogenic illness. And iatrogenic illness is simply illness that is related to medical treatment, meaning this: I come in with, you know, with issue A, and I go to the doctor, I got issue A, I need some help. The treatment is then carried out, and you die from problem B. Problem B wasn't the initial problem. Problem B is the result of the treatment.
Right.
Okay, that's called the iatrogenic illness. The statistics reveal that over 750,000 U.S. citizens die every year from iatrogenic illness. That statistic, as shocking as it is more astonishing when you realize that represents the leading cause of death in the United States.
Wow.
That the second leading cause of death is about 700 million people a year, and that is cardiovascular disease. Medicine is more lethal. Because no one talks about this, because it's not the common fact that they show you on television news, and there are reasons as to why, simply, that
mm-hmm.
most of the broadcasting dollars come from the drug industry anyway. They're not going to, you know, bite the hand that feeds them, so they don't describe this. But I think people should stop. They should be shocked. They should be incensed. They should be outraged that this is a fact, and I'm not making it up, that 750,000 people die from medical treatment, and then they go after a guy selling vitamins and call them quacks and things and stuff like that. And the reality is, my God, they're so offensive about these other things.
It's true.
We have never stopped to look at what they're doing. And it's just like the church was back a long time ago. Church was making all the claims that we're going to help you. Their pressure and the amount of money that they collected and their control over people was the problem more than anything else was a problem. That's what led to the Reformation.
Big
It was turned down by the New York publishers because helping me interface with the public, they tried to inform me, you can't be against genes and Darwin. And therefore, they said, you know, pick one and leave the other one alone, and then we'll talk about publishing the book. And the reality is, the science is a science. I don't care what you think. This is science. So after messing around with them for a year where they wanted me to keep rewriting the book to make it palatable.
Oh, my God.
By taking out the science. And that was not my intention. And then we self-published the book. So my partner, Margaret, put her money into it and published it. And therefore, we got much better results because I'm allowed to tell the real science in spite of this overpower thing, you know, the moguls who run publishing who want you to publish in this little confined space for the people. It's sort of like, no, I want to open the door bigger. More information.
I commend you for persevering with your vision of it. I think it's a lovely production. In your credits here, in your acknowledgments, you mention the music by the group Yes.
Oh, God, I love those guys. It's always, as I wrote in there, it's like, I when writing this up, and I started hearing them years and years ago.
Sure.
Nine voices, this dialogue.
When I started to become more aware, I also started to recognize this group was saying a lot of things that was out of the ordinary rock and roll kind of story. They were talking about the light and the spirit and all this stuff, and I realized in the end, when my science started to make sense, it was exactly what they were singing about. And I thought, and they say it in such a nice poetry in a few lines, and I have to spend chapters to bring it into the science, but the results are exactly the same.
Excellent.
When the sun came up inside, as the perfect calendar says, each had the power of people speaking new languages. They give forgiveness meaning, new ways of letting go. Each child is born for greatness with forces that surround them. This voice, this dialogue.
With all of this, both the white coats and the black coats, there's so much fear involved, and that can't help but be counterproductive to any kind of healing or growth or productive life.
Right, and all the fear comes from what? The first premise is, I am a victim. It's out of my control. Other things affect me, and I can't deal with them, and I need to get the professional between me and the source of the problem.
I need to count on you, but I can't trust you.
Well, that's what we're beginning to find right now.
Yeah.
You know? Well, that leads to a backlash where people seek other truths. And the interesting thing is this. The science that conventional medicine has predicated its truths by is a science that's based on the physics of Isaac Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Newton physics, Newtonian mechanics, is a physics that emphasizes the physical world, like I mentioned, and ignores as irrelevant the invisible spaces.
Right.
Well, this was an effect of physics up to a certain point, which was 1925. Because by 1925, there were understandings that completely revolutionized the field of physics. And here's what the difference is. Newtonian physics, a mechanistic material universe, the smallest things in the universe are atoms. Atoms, by their definition, mean uncuttable. That was the Latin meaning. That's the smallest thing there is.
Mm-hmm.
So the point about it is that then science says, well, if you want to understand the nature of anything, you understand the character of its atoms. These are the physical things that make it up. So your atoms are different than my atoms, and that's why you're different than I am, period. So the differences are accountable in the atoms, which are the molecules, which are the physical things that make up the body.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1925, a new breed of physicists had come up to find out something that was totally extraordinary. That little marble-like thing called an atom turns out actually not to be so physical as we thought it was, because they found out the atom is made of something else. You can break the atom, and inside there are other things. So it's like, ah, so the new level of physics says, ooh, what are those things inside the atom? Well, the first shock was, they're not physical. They're not tangible.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not particles. They're energy vortices, like little tornadoes. And why is this relevant? Because the first understanding that comes out of this is, number one, what we look at as physical matter at the fundamental level is not matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's energy. And all of a sudden, why that becomes important? Because then they found out that the invisible spaces between the matter is also filled with energy. And then why is that relevant? Because then it says the invisible spaces and the energy that makes up matter are interconnected with one another, and that the field, the invisible energy that surrounds us, actually is more responsible for the shape of matter than matter is. In my lectures, what I show is a slide where I take some iron filings, and I sprinkle them on a piece of paper using like a salt shaker. Just put the iron filings.
Yeah.
Salt shaker, sprinkle it on a piece of paper, and you get a random pile of iron filings. And so you throw it away, you sprinkle it again, you get another random pile, and you keep doing it. Every time you do it, get a random pile of filings. And then once, I say, before I sprinkle it, I stick a magnet underneath the piece of paper. Now I sprinkle the iron filings. Guess what? They don't fall randomly anymore.
No.
Now they have the shape of the magnetic field. And the relevance, okay, throw it away, sprinkle it again. Ah, it has the shape of the magnetic field. This little simple demonstration provides the most important understanding that I could talk about in the simplest version. It says this: matter alone, iron filings, don't form any structure. They just are piles of sand. But particles in a field, like the magnetic field,
mm-hmm.
then become organized. And there's a statement by Albert Einstein. I'll say it slowly because it's really important, because if just you understand this one statement and then apply it to life, then everything changes the meaning of life. And it goes like this. Quote, Albert Einstein, "The field is the primary governing agency of the particle." What Einstein was saying was the field, the invisible forces,
mm-hmm.
are the primary governing agency of the particle, matter. The invisible forces shape matter. Relevance? Medicine, focusing on only the tangible physical forces, ignores the invisible stuff. And yet, according to physics, you can't just ignore it. You have to recognize, not just to ignore it, that it itself is more fundamentally important in shaping the matter than anything else was. The medicine throws out the invisible. What do they throw out? The mind. They throw out the energy fields that we live in. They throw out the fact that all matter, as I said, we thought was made out of little particles called atoms. Now all matter is actually made out of energy vortices.
Mm-hmm.
Relevance about that is that anything that's made out of matter also gives off energy. It says, then when two physical things come next to each other, while we don't see them physically connect, their energies become entangled, the invisible stuff. And since the energies are more powerful in shaping things, the entanglement of energies between two people has a profound effect on the physical character of the people involved.
You can't ignore it.
Well, yeah, but we do in biology, don't we? We don't talk about the mind and the field. They left the mind out as much as they possibly could leave it out, because it turned out to be an interference with medicine.
Bruce, I have to ask you, with these kinds of thoughts, you're almost a heretic, aren't you, in your field?
I am a heretic, because science, which was designed to counter religion, the black coats and the white coats, the white coat people have become a religion unto themselves in this regard, because they created a dogma, like a set of Ten Commandments. And this they hold to be the absolute shining star of truth in science.